Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
A lot of us have nicknames. Some of us are branded with them, and others take them on as a matter of pride.
Everyone really just knows me as Kelly Shortenqueer, and the number of people in my life who say, I don't actually know what your legal last name is, and I always just kind of smile and laugh, and no one really pushes it. And the interesting thing is, years later, after I'd been using it, my stepmother actually said that when she found out I was using that name, she thought it meant I had low self-esteem, and it really opened up a really interesting conversation around me identifying as queer in general. And the number of people who meet me finally for the first time go, you really are short. And I'm always waiting for the next part to come.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Dave. And today, the story of Kelly, who was just like any other awkward fifth grader, love-struck and craving attention. But one thing set Kelly apart. Kelly joined us on stage at Mortified's debut in Denver. Just behind him, a screen projecting a photo of his childhood self, an adorably awkward fifth grade girl.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Kelly. So when I was in fifth grade, long before I transitioned from female to male, I was a super nerd. And I went to a public school that was kind of an undercover magnet school for other super nerds. So needless to say, most of us were really struggling with our dating game. My love for turtlenecks and stretch pants weren't really helping me. Neither was my impressive collection of vests. So despite all this, I was becoming an expert in obsessing over boys. I really was particularly enamored by a boy named Nick, who was definitely not a nerd. In fact, Nick had a rat tail that was majestic. And I was smitten with him immediately. How was I, Kelly the super nerd, going to get him to like me? So things didn't start off so easy. March 16th, 1992. At lunch on Monday, Nick, out of nowhere, tells Ben and Jeremy that I'm stuck up, selfish, and full of jealousy. Then I kept asking Ben and Jeremy what I'm jealous of, and they just shrugged their shoulders. Then Nick told me to fuck myself. Actually, he told someone else to tell me. So then Jen goes over to Nick, who tells him, Kelly has someone to fuck, but she doesn't know who. After school, Nick comes to me at my locker and says, I hope you have a good time with your girlfriends tonight, and don't forget to use protection and don't get rabies. Then he just walked away. So, sounds like true love, right? I did briefly entertain the idea of other boys. August 15th, 1992. I'm at Jen's shore house in Brigantine right now. I have a major crush on Jen's brother, Dan. Life is not fair. It's 7:57, and about 20 minutes ago, Dan asked me to help him make his bed, and I did, and he thanked me. Later that day, I can't stand this. I haven't been here one full day, and I'm in love with Dan. Dan asked Kenny to get him more to drink, but I got it instead. I kissed all around the rim of Dan's cup. He keeps winking and smiling at me. But, of course, the hardest to get is always the most appealing, so my attention inevitably went back to Nick. December 8th, 1992. I just got out of the shower when Tears in Heaven, the song, came on, and I wrapped my towel around me tightly and started to slow dance with myself. I was dreaming about dancing with Nick. I really like him a lot. Today in MG, he was talking to me, and I tried to help him make his checkerboard. I just want to be with him all the time. He's nice, cute, responsible, and forgets about the stuff that you want him to. December 21st, 1992. It's almost Christmas. Today, Nick had to tell me that he loved me. It was just a bet, though. David arm wrestled him on Friday, and he just had to tell me that because he lost. He had to get on one knee, look me straight in the eye, and tell me that he loved me. It was so embarrassing because most of the class was around us watching. He also warned me that it was only for a bet. When he said it, he had trouble. I love you. It was so embarrassing. I heard them making another bet, and I heard someone say, if Nick wins, he kisses Amanda. If he loses, he kisses Kelly. He said no as fast as they made that up. I mean, it's good that he's not gonna, like, kiss me for losing a bet, right? So, anyway. February 2nd, 1993. Stephen and Nick wanted me to make bracelets for them. I showed them how to make V-stitch and diagonal. Right now, I'm about to work on a V-stitch for Nick. While we were waiting for Mr. Williams, Nick said something about the bracelets. Then Ben says, he's going to ask you to the dance. But when I looked at Nick's face, I couldn't tell whether or not Ben was telling the truth. While we're on the fourth floor, I asked Lauren to ask him to the dance for me. Later, she told me that he was going to ask me anyway. I have a date with Nick to the dance. Come on, I've been waiting for this for years. Ben's locker is only a few away from mine. Nick came over to his locker, but said something to me. When I was leaving, he said, see ya, and I said, bye. February 7th, 1993. I can't stand my dad. He's making me use plaques now, and it's really disgusting. I feel like I'm gonna cry. I'm trying to cheer myself up, so I'll write about Nick a little bit. Me and Nick are going to the green and white dance together. Did I write that in my other diary? Hold on, let me check. Yeah, I guess I did. I love him so much, and I think my dad is figuring that out. Nick is so cute, and when I look into his eyes, I get all tingly inside. When we talk, I feel like I'm in another world. I have this really horrible urge to kiss him. I want to feel his body pressed against mine during the dance. I want to feel his hands on the back of my neck. By the way, I'm performing at the Free Library tomorrow with my choir. and we're singing This One's for the Children and Beauty and the Beast. I'll tell you how it goes later.
I ended up asking one of my closest friends to ask him to the dance for me. So we never even directly communicated about it. But I will say that it was the greatest moment of my life at that point, that I was getting to go to the dance with Nick. And I think even though I knew we were going, you know, as friends, I think that I was maybe just hoping that this would be the moment we would dance together and it would click and then we would be dating and everything would be perfect.
So then I had to wait 6 unbearable weeks for the green and white dance, and I probably did a lot more practicing in my bath towel while I counted down the days. And finally, when I thought I just couldn't wait any longer, it happened. March 21st, 1993. Friday was the dance. The music sucked because there were only 3 so songs. I danced 2 with Nick, the first one I felt myself shaking, and 1 time with Justin. And then I didn't write anything else about it, which is ridiculous. But then, June 3rd, 1993, Ryan keeps touching my butt every morning. There's this thing called circle dot where you draw a circle and then put a dot in the middle of someone's hand, and then you close their hand, and you say, you can't open your hand until you touch a boy or a girl's butt. And if you open your hand, then you're a fag. And then in parentheses, I wrote gay. Two days ago, at lunch recess, most of the girls were trying to get Nick. Well, the girls were trying to touch Nick's butt, but only a few of them could catch him. So then someone did circle dot to him, and he ended up touching my butt. The other time was when we were in science. He sits next to me across the aisle. He closed my hand at the beginning of the period, so then I just sat there looking at him, and he's like, what? So I say, stand up. And he won't stand up, but then David came over and closed Nick's hand and said he couldn't open it until he touches Kelly's butt. When David left, Nick put his head down on his arms looking at me and says, want to make an exchange? So I guess I started blushing, and he kept saying, you first, to me. Finally, he said, fine, I'll go first. So he touched my butt. But I never touched his. So at some point when he figured out that I wasn't going to touch his, he took my hand and opened it and said, it's okay. You can open your hand now, and you're not gay. Well, I guess he was wrong about that last part. So we never did end up dating, but he did touch my butt twice. Thank you.
That was Kelly Shortenqueer reading aloud his childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness, in Denver at the Oriental Theater. And now, there's more to the story in our postmortem, Fide. We wondered, did Kelly, all the way back in grade school, have any inkling that he would grow up to question his gender identity?
One of the pieces about my journey is that I don't often see myself reflected in mainstream media. There's a trans narrative that people are really comfortable with in terms of, I knew from a young age, and this has always been the trajectory of my life, and I want to go from here to here. And I think for me, it wasn't until really college, and maybe part of it was finding out that that was an option. But I think that growing up, I didn't have that internal conflict around feeling like I wasn't able to be who I really was.
And when Kelly entered college, he did start having that internal conflict. And he sought comfort from a like-minded community.
So I went to this gay pride parade in this like metallic blue dress that was like a little bit mermaidy, wearing a rainbow necklace, you know, and I show up as an ally, you know, quote unquote ally, and I leave with a girlfriend. And so looking back, it's just this like funny scenario that I don't know how much I was just in denial or just not really dealing with it. And so I ended up coming out as queer the day that I started dating my first girlfriend.
Coming out turned out to be one of the first major milestones in what was a much longer journey. If anything, Kelly's inner struggle was just the beginning.
So this is a letter from when I was 19 years old and really just starting to think about gender identity. Over the past few years, I have been struggling with something I have no words for. Something is missing. I hate the girly image for myself. I never want to be in pink or lace again. So I wonder how butch I am or can become. I still like to put on fancy dresses sometimes. I think this is what fucks me up. I want to be boyish, but I want others to also see my femininity. All my life, I have been complimented on the fact that I can't easily be categorized. This is how I feel about my gender lately. I don't really feel like I look or act one way or another. I feel lost and alone because no one else is Kelly. I was confused for a boy twice yesterday. It made me laugh and get excited. I wonder if I could pass. Not for my entire life, but maybe a night. I want answers now, but no one can tell me what's going on for me. I feel like I'm slipping further and further into loneliness. I know in my head that other people have the same feelings and confusions, but where are they now?
Despite writing with such clarity at 19, Kelly didn't share his feelings with anyone.
But looking back, I think I wasn't quite ready for the answers to my questions, and I was really afraid of what that would mean. And years later, when I finally looked back in my journal and I just saw years worth of me going back and forth of this thing would come up and then I would kind of pack it away and then it would kind of bubble up again and then I'd pack it away. I was afraid to find out that, yes, I was trans. Yes, I'm going to transition. And, you know, at that time when I was 19, you know, in 2000, I didn't know what was possible. I didn't know if that meant I was going to lose my family, if I would lose my social network, if I would be totally cut off from everything, what type of violence I might endure.
And so for the next 4 years, Kelly identified himself as a woman. But eventually, that gender identity felt too confining.
I worked in an elementary school, and all of the kids were calling me Miss. And then I was going to work at a summer camp where everyone was calling me aunt. And so the two biggest things in my life that I totally loved were just overly gendering me female all the time. And so I was pushing back against that. I ended up having a long conversation with one of my roommates who I think knew that I was really struggling with issues of gender identity. And he asked what I would look like when I was older. And that was actually one of those critical moments where I realized, if I don't do anything now, if I don't make a conscious choice, I'm not going to become the person who I see myself being.
And with that realization, everything changed. Kelly shared with us a journal entry written the very next day.
Last night, I stayed up until 5 a.m. talking to and cuddling with Christopher. And in the end, I finally admitted that I think I'm a boy. For the first time, out loud. I stopped identifying as a woman a long time ago, but I don't know, something feels right. I think that playing with and changing pronouns might be the first step. And the amazing thing is that when I look back at certain friends, they already know. They get it. Even Irene, in a letter from camp, gave me room to be her sister or brother. And it's things like that that might help me come out. And now I think I'm kind of excited to tell people. I don't know. It's scary. But it seems to make a lot of sense.
At age 23, Kelly set out to make the Kelly on the outside match the Kelly that he knew himself to be on the inside.
In 2004 was really that turning point for me when I decided that I no longer identified as female and that I was going to transition to male. And initially what that meant was starting to use different pronouns. And then about a year later, I started on testosterone and went through a second puberty, which was still awkward, but at least I had some more adult skills of understanding how all of this stuff worked. And then I ended up having top surgery in 2013.
We all remember how awkward and psychologically exhausting puberty can be. And here Kelly was, in his mid-20s, going through it all over again. And on top of that, he had to deal with the uncertainty of not knowing who might disappear from his life.
I have learned a really important lesson about patience, which I was not very patient in the beginning around my expectations and what I wanted from people. You know, in many years into my transition now, I am able to look back and, you know, I have the luxury of time to be able to say some people have really come around and there are some people that I have different expectations for than other folks in my life. But I think that the people who really matter the most have at least made an effort.
Having gone through puberty number two, Kelly's transition has finally given him that sense of stability he's been searching for since, really, all the way back in fifth grade.
I think in a lot of ways, I'm someone who cares a lot about what other people think of me. And I think that journey to figure out who I really am allows me to shed some of that. I'm not trying to fit into somebody else's box. I feel like we all hold expectations from our family, our friends, our coworkers. There are certain ways that we're taught to behave and how we do that. And in those moments when you get to be your true self, all of that actually just melts away. When I get to go back into the places where I feel comfortable and know that people have my back, there is a groundedness and a self-assurance. If I'm always trying to be somebody else, it's never going to be good enough. And when I finally was able to just be me, my whole world opened up to me.
A big thank you to Kelly Shortenqueer for sharing his stories with us today. And it's important to note that Kelly's gotten a lot of support from friends and family during his transition. But that's something that can't be said for everyone in the trans community. In fact, the trans community in this country alone is facing a crisis. According to a survey by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, trans people are nearly 10 times more likely to commit suicide than the general population. Roughly 41%. That's almost 1 in 2. Think about that. So please consider supporting organizations that are making a difference in the trans community. A few of them include the Trevor Project. You can check them out at trevorproject.org, the National Center for Transgender Equality at transequality.org. If you can't donate, please consider volunteering or even just sharing this episode with friends. Maybe they'll be inspired or share links to any of these organizations. Let the transgender community know they're not alone. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Paul Smith, Pusha Pat, Neil Ketcher, and myself, Dave Nadelberg. David Blatt story produced this for The Stage. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snakes, Snakes, Snakes. Additional thanks to the Derek Weisbein, Lance Roberts Studios, The Oriental Theater, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make The Stage Show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we can survive.